Accession number 31468, Sir Brian Ward, Bill 4. Now, you were just about to tell me about how you got put on CB for something.
Yeah, well, it was we've been to the pitches, three or four of us, and when we got back to the barracks, which was, I say, a fair way away, there was only a skeleton crew there. There had been an emergency call out, as if the Russians or the East Germans had invaded.
Now, were they called Active Edge then? Because they were called Active Edge later on.
That's right. And everything went. At a minute, well, I won't say a minute's notice, but it was emptied. You had to be up and out within an hour to a strategic point. And we missed that one day. So the...
And what happened?
Well, they weren't best pleased. We'd got cook-ass fatigues. But, yeah, it happened two or three times when I was there. We just loaded into three tunnels. Nobody told you we were going. We just went. We might be driving for hours. And all of a sudden, we'd stop, and they'd say, righto, dig in there, and there. And we'd dig in, and we might be there for one day, 2 days, 3 days. And then we'd fill in, and back to the camp. And was it cold in the winter? It was cold. I always remember I was on stag in a field, and it was snowing, and I'd got my greatcoat on, and I sat on the floor with my back to a telegraph pole, windward side, and I went to sleep like that. Now, if I'd have been fit, I should have been hypothermia. Never been so cold.
Anything else? I mean, how did you get on with the rest of the lads in your unit?
Well, the National Service lads, we was all in the same... together, you know, we'd been called up. So we'd all got calendars, days to do. You know, cruising off. Whereas... no disrespect, but a lot of the regulars, I've probably said before, I couldn't believe that, you know, I'd done an apprenticeship, I'd done a 6-year apprenticeship, got my qualifications, that people couldn't read or write when I got in the army. And that was, and I don't mean just ordinary, I mean some of the corporals, they'd been in the army that long, they knew the ropes and they got promoted, but when it come to putting things down on paper or whatever, or read part one orders, it was unreal, it really was. And, you know, you just couldn't comprehend the people that couldn't read or write. Not well, they could sign the names, pay and pay book correct, sir, and that's it, but as regards...
And this was amongst the regulars?
Yeah, and we used to have what you call a third class education, if you wanted to do it. But I say, I know there's one bloke in particular... He came from Colville, and I used to write and read his letters for him. And he'd signed on for 12 years.
And that was much more common amongst the regulars.
Yes.
Did you get on well with the regulars?
Certainly did. Yes, no problem at all. Well, there's one or two a bit of a... There's one or two corporals who were a bit... that I would like to have met when I got back in Civvy Street.
Well, tell us about the NCOs. What were they like?
Well, our drum major, you couldn't fault him. He was really... He was really made for the job as a drum major. But we'd got a couple of corporals, one corporal in particular. He was a right no-no. He's one of the blokes that couldn't read or write properly. We had another one who was really a bully. And if you let him get the top side of you, it could make your life really... He'd all the while be at you for fatigues or... He's a sort of bloke, if you're on guard... He'd nick your bedding, he'd smoke, and it's probably cigarette burns in your blanket, which you get done for, and he'd say it won't you, and he'd put the blame onto you and things like that. He was a really, really bad lot.
Any others bad or good?
No, not the officers was quite a lot of them were straight out of sand. Well, I say some of them was regulars. Had been in Korea. A lot of them had been in Korea, and there were officers in charge of companies, A company, B company, officers, usually the rank of major or captain. Now, the CO was a lieutenant colonel. His name was Michael St. George Pallow, and we used to call him Black Mike. And he was very disciplined. All the orders during the day that he put out when he wanted it had to be done by bugle calls. Not just your calling for dinner or lights out or parades, if you wanted orderly sergeant, company sergeants, fire drill, it all had to be done outside the CO's office on a bugle calls. So it was very, very strict on that sort of infantry procedures. In fact, we got some Yanks billeted with us one night, and one of the buglers didn't play which he should have done for the reveille for the Yanks. Not that they would have minded anyway, but it was that sort of work. It had to be, there were no left or right, it was down the middle. Down the middle.
What about the rest of the officers? What do you think of them?
We had one. I didn't realise how old he was at the time. In fact, I was older than him, but he was a lieutenant. And if you do anything wrong, he used to say, do you want the COs, in front of COs, or do you want my punishment, or take my punishment? You say, righto, sir, I'll take yours. Righto, then put your red vest on, get down the gym and put the gloves on. And you last about half a round with him. He was the local BOAR. We were like gun fodder to him. But, okay, if that's what he wanted. I met him in later life, and we got on quite well, you know. He was a good chap. And the other officers were all right. Yeah, I have no complaints. I mean, they kept themselves to themselves in those days. It was them and us. I always remember on the Regimental Tigers weekend, I see the part one orders. It was officers and their ladies, WOs and sergeants and their wives, and ORs and their women. I always remember that. That was one party I see on the board.
Well, tell us a bit more about the... We skated past a bit. What would happen in the regiment and the Tigers weekend then? What sort of do's?
Eating and drinking and commemorating the history of the regiment. All the silver would be laid out and there would be big parades with the Rafa companies and the band and drums. And then I say a show at night, and then we'd have a special sit-down dinner in the evening to commemorate Tigers weekend. Christmas was a unique occasion.
Tell us about that.
Used to get woke up in the morning with an officer with a galvanised bucket with diluted rum and come round giving you a drink for Christmas. And then we used to have a Christmas lunch at lunchtime. Not at night, in the that was Christmas 1960. I was there on that one, and that used to be I suppose in some ways it used to get to be a drink and orgy, but it was all right.
Now, how'd you get on with the Germans when you went out?
Well, it depends which part of Germany you came from. Around Munster, we wasn't really liked, or we got on, but nothing. But when we was further east, they couldn't do enough for you, because when you're on the border, they were wary of the Russians or the East German police, and we used to use their farms to billet in at night in the stackyards, and it were no problem. But I say in Munster, you got talking to them in the pubs, none of them. Well, the ones I took had never fought the Brits. They'd all been on the Eastern Front. Nobody had been on the Rhine or in Belgium and France or anywhere like that.
And what was a night out like in Munster?
Well, there was either the pictures, which are called the Globe Cinema. I was always told there were local bars. Bearing in mind, we hadn't got a lot of money to do anything anyway. I mean, you used to get paid on a Thursday. You used to get half the money in German and half the money in what we call BAFs, paper money. was a month there. And the paper money, it's what you could use in the naffy to buy your boot polish or brasso and food, egg and chips, whatever. And then you got the German money to go down, well, if you feel there's something different for a change. But I say, we handle a lot of money anyway. I think we're on about £1 up 30 shillings a week at the most, which was nothing really. I mean, my parents used to send me the odd pound or two over when they wrote to me.
And did you drink much?
Whiskey were 15 shillings a bottle in the mess. But no, not really. No. Well, as I say, we couldn't afford it. A lot of people, we had one chap, one drummer, he drank that much, he was sick, swallowed his tongue, and killed himself. And we spent 3 weeks rehearsing his funeral. We used an ammo box and all the trimmings, and we buried him in Germany. Bloke from Leicester, he was. Yeah, so, but he was known as a bit of a, he liked his ale, but it done him that night. He was sick when he was in bed, and he choked to death. Yeah, there was a fair bit of, I mean, we had one bloke, he came in drunk, and he, this bloke was asleep in his bed, and, well, for a better word, he shit all over him while he was asleep, because he was drunk. But the bloke got his own back 2 or 3 weeks later, unreal. He put razor blades in his soap.
That's quite nasty, though.
That one, a bloke from Birmingham, actually. Yeah, put razor blades in his soap.
And did it work? I mean, did he cut his hands?
Oh yeah. Yeah, but you know, that's how some of them were. I mean, it weren't in our core or whatever, but it did happen. Yeah.
Now, anything else that you remember from your time out there? You know, just things that happened.
I got very friendly with a married couple and their young baby. I met him on one of these concerts at Cologne. He was a musician in the German Air Force, and he lived in Munster, and he used to invite me at weekends back to his house for a supper and drink, because he used to like cigarettes, and I used to get him Peter Stuyvesant, because we were allowed 200 a week, you see. So I used to take him the cigarettes, and his wife used to cook me a meal.
So they were a German couple?
Oh, yes, he was in the German Air Force, a musician. He played the clarinet. Yeah, I got on very well with him. In fact, my only thing is that I wish I'd have kept in touch. I've still got photographs of him, and I used to go and see him at least once or whatever and have a meal with him and take him the cigarettes. So, yeah, it was all right.
Anything else about your time? So you were, you know, doing your military training, doing your band things, occasionally going off to beat the tattoo in England. Yep. Anything else? Anything else you were doing?
No, not really. No. Just wishing the time away, I suppose. Because, you know.
Did you find it boring?
No, not really. Not really, because they had so much to do. We had a lot. If it had been in a rifle company, it might have been different. But if we weren't soldiering, we were banding. So it was keeping busy all the while. I mean, every Saturday morning, we used to have to parade around the barracks playing.
Well, tell me about that.
Well, it was sort of the CO's idea that to keep the morale up, the band and drums should march at 11 o'clock all the way around the barracks and perform on the square every Saturday morning. So, you know, we weren't in full kit. It was just ordinary battle dress and number twos and things like that. Nothing startling, but it was a sort of a ego boost for the troops, if you like. Yes. Yeah. Anything else? No, I don't think so. Well, I used to enjoy when we used to pack up the kit and come over here on the rail and then on the boats to come to. We used to put whiskey and gin and stuff inside the cases to bring it across.
Smuggling. Well, not smuggling, I mean.
No. Well, I also remember, you know, when you've got your berry on and you've got it pulled down one side. I was courting at the time, and I picked up quite a nice lady's watch, and I put it in my berry, and then where you pushed it down over your ear, that's where this watch was. Because the customs are a right pain when you come home. They're all at you all the while to see what you were bringing back. I would suggest people who have been to Cyprus or Malaya, they really got a grip, more grip of those who've been to these places. You know, there was that, you hold the wall. As soon as you go off the boat at Harwich or wherever, there was that, you tip your kit bag out and do this and do that. You know, they're probably only, we used to call them wooden tops, military police, one stripe, with a peak cap slashed across the forehead.
Now, so what happens next then? You're out there till when?
February the 19th, 1961.
Is that when you come back to England or when you're demobilised?
That's when I got back to England and demobilised. I had to bring most of my gear back. And then I had to put it into the post office. And lo and behold, they took it back to Glen Parver for me.
And what about the demob procedure?
Well, you went to see in front of the CO 2 days before you went. And I always remember, I mean, you got a card, you've seen this somewhere, telling you how sort of soldier you'd been and whether you was, you know. And lo and behold, I got a good record. And I always remember when the RSM marched you in, you know, 23610, Ward, da-di-da. And he said, Ward, I'm looking at your record, very good, exemplary, he said. If you sign on, I can guarantee within probably 2 or 3 years they'll be calling you sir. I said, sir, when I get here and back in Civil Street, people will be calling me sir anyway. And he said, march him outside, Sergeant Major, at the double.
You weren't going to have it.
No, they asked me if I'd sign. You could sign on for 3 years, you see, for a start. And then it was 6, 5, 9 and 12. I regret probably in a way, because from there they went to Hong Kong, then there was in that trouble at Aden, then in the 64 there was at Borneo, you know, the problems in Indonesia. But there you go, your horse wives after the event, isn't it?
So what happened when you came back?
When I came back, as I came back in February, I went back to my old job.
Now, what was the demob procedure when you were actually demobbed?
You just shook hands with your mates. You'd been to the front of the CO. A three-tonner came to the barrack room. You put your gear on board with the rest of the intake from 2 years ago. Taken to Munster Station. Onto the train. Onto the boat. Onto London. Then you made your way home, whether it was Leicester, Melton, Birmingham, Warwick, wherever. And then you got a week to get your kit back in. The battle rest you went in and all your bits and pieces. You're allowed to keep your underwear, towels, shaving, what they call the housewife. You're allowed to keep those. And the rest of the stuff went back to Glen Parver.
Now, what were you going to do? You'd been an apprentice engineer, hadn't
That's
you?
That's right.
Had your service, your national service, made you think of doing anything else, or did you just go back to it?
When we got back, the police force were recruiting heavily of ex-service. A few of my mates did join the police service. But I decided to go back to where I served my time. I was there for about 9 months, and the furnaces closed down, and I was made redundant. But it wasn't all doom and gloom, because I was only... Within a week, I'd got a job as an engineer working for Mars. That's Pedigree Pet Foods, the people that make Kitty Cat, Pal, Whiskers, things like that. And I rose through the ranks with them. Finished up as a manager.
And that was your career?
Pretty well. But
so
then...
You were not just an engineer, you were a manager as well?
Yeah. Well, for a start, I was on the tools. Then I went in the industrial engineers, time and motion. Then, for my sins, I supplied taxis and hearses for funerals and cars for 2 years, but that didn't work out. And I remember a bloke in Melton said, if you want your job back, you can have it and you'll be a manager within inside 12 months. I said, right. So I sold up, and lo and behold, I was a manager down there. On maintenance, and the wife was very ill, so they took me off shifts, and I was in charge of hiring and buying forklift trucks and all the lubrication.
So, yeah, I mean, you had a successful career down there. Now, there's just two. Do you think your national service had helped you at all in making a man of your
own? Oh, yes, yes. I mean, people now say I'm very outspoken. You know, a spade's a spade, but, you know, I've been it, done it. The only regret with national service is I went to Germany. Now, a lot of my friends went to Malaya. I should like to have gone to Malaya or Cyprus at the sharp end. I mean, you're going to plane tomorrow, can't you, go to Germany? Whereas Malaya, you know, I often wish we'd have had a choice to have gone further afield.
Not so much for the active service then, but for the experience.
Well, active service, I suppose, yeah, pot hunting, yeah.
Oh, you would have liked that?
I would like to have seen active service, yes, I would. And that's yes, I would have liked to have seen active service.
Now, tell me about your TA commitment.
Right. When I left the army, demobbed, I joined the 7th Battalion Anglians, TA, Overscross Road.
Where?
Overscross Road, Leicester. I was there for a year because by that time I'd got off the ladder at Mars Pet Foods. And it was commitment. Every Tuesday, weekends, whatever. And I work shifts. And so it was a sort of, well, who pays your wages? So after about 12 months, 18 months, I packed that in. However, in 1983, one of my jobs was to employ contract workers on various jobs, i.e. pipe fitting, things like that. And this particular chap I got very friendly with, and he got an interest the same as me, was World War One. I used to go all over the world with people on World War One. And one day he came to me and said, hey, he said, there's a gang starting up called HSF. I said, what's that? He said, Home Service Force. I said, oh, what's that to vote? He said, no worry, because he was an ex-Paris, who this chap was. He'd served his, he was a regular 5 years, but he'd done most of his time in Jordan. He said, let's do it. I said, well, hang on. But he said, there's no tricks, he said. We're going to the Royal Logistic Corps at Grantham, Prince William Barracks. He said, we'll ride. We're not going to walk anymore. We'll ride. I said, fine, that'll do me.
Prince William Barracks?
Yeah, at Prince William Gloucester Barracks at Spitalgate Hill at Grantham. So I had a word with my personnel chap, and I said, look, we've been volunteered, for want of a better word, that we ought to join this HSF. And he asked me, what's it all about? What's it all about? And it's the thing that Margaret Thatcher got going. I don't know if you knew about it, did you?
No, tell us a bit about the background.
Right. Formed in 1982 by the Thatcher government, the Home Service Force was entirely intended purely for home defence unit to use guard key points throughout the UK against sabotage, which thought might come from Spetsnaz, the Russian Special Forces, or any other terrorists. There were no shortage of volunteers. After a brief advertising campaign, units were formed all over the UK. The military service could have been with the Army, Navy, or the Air Force. This meant there wasn't the usual raw recruit training, just to refresh her, bring him up to scratch, using the SLR and later the SA-80. We were disbanded in 1993.
You served right the way through to then?
Pretty well, yeah. And
You joined in 83?
84 I joined.
84, right.
84, and I finished in 89.
Now, tell me, so you joined that. So what training did you get? Did you get any training at all, or was it just...
Yes, yes. We had to report... anyway, well, I went for this medical at Grantham, and it was a para major that interviewed me. And he said, yeah, would you believe it? When I walked in front of him and sat down, he'd got a folder, and all my army records was on his table when I got... He knew I'd give blood to get a pint of beer from the beer mate in Munster. You know, he used to give blood and they give you a bottle of beer, didn't they? Like that. So it got that were all down there. Anyway, he asked me what are we doing and one thing. Bottom line is, we were passed to go. He said, you'll hear from us within the month. And I did. Unfortunately, he said, there's not enough of you to form a platoon at Grantham. You can either say thank you very much, or you can join the Worcestershire and Sherwood Foresters 3rd Battalion, either at Derby, Beeston, or Mansfield. Now, this chap I was with out of Paris said, come on, we'll join it. So we joined Beeston. But prior to that...
That's the one you went for, Beeston.
Yeah. But prior to that, I had to get permission from the personnel people. Because don't forget, Petfords were paying my wages, and the army would be paying my wages, plus the fact that I got petrol mileage from here to Beeston. So when we started at Beeston, it was once a month on a Tuesday night, parade night in the drill hall.
Now tell me about the drill night then.
Well, the drill night was getting to know you, because I say, there were people from every regiment and corps you could think of, plus RAF blokes and Navy blokes. So they had to be re-educated with the SLR. And I could still remember it, so in no time, I got a stripe as a weapons instructor, stripping and maintaining the weapons. Now, we didn't do much in the drill lines, but we used to go to a place called Beckingham, near Newark, for live firing.
Now, hang on, anything else going on a drill night?
Lectures, comms reading, lectures on about the Spetsnaz, what the bid looking, what they're looking for, because we were supposed, if we didn't get the fan, we were supposed to look after power stations in and around Leicester, Nottinghamshire, and television and radio stations. That's what our jobs were. And we used to get an update. Used to be an intelligence officer coming from, usually the 1st Battalion of the Worcestershire Regiment, and tell us what was what going off, what to look for, to see, you know, see to the situation. Oh, we got re-kitted again, sleeping bags, combat kit, cobbly wobblies, the big boots, you know, right up your lace-ups, big boots, socks and everything. We got all that sorted again. And we had the cap badge of the Worcester and Sherwood Foresters. And we came under instructions with the RSM. He used to come every so often for the 1st Battalion and just put us through paces. And then, in 1987, we was volunteered to troop the colour at Newark.
What do you mean by that? Tell us about that then.
Well, we went to Scampton for about 6 weekends with this RSM. There was troop, like you see on the telly, proper Le Huguenots, Scipio, the lot, marched past. I was on number 2 guard. Princess Royal, Princess Anne, she took the salute. And we had a dress rehearsal. Well, we used to go every weekend to Scampton. No, we didn't. Swinderby. And practice on there all day for about 4 or 5 weeks, as I say. Then we had a dress rehearsal on the route at Newark. And then in the afternoon, we performed the Troop in the Colour. And it were brilliant.
That was in front of Princess Anne?
Yes.
Now, what year was that, sorry?
April 1987. I think we're the only TA battalion that's ever trooped the colour. Brilliant. And the only regret I've got, somebody was supposed to have filmed it, and the film broke down, so we never got a chance. But I got a number of photographs from it, which I treasure.